Welcome to a very special episode of Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast. Since there's not a new episode this week or next, we're going back in time to 1990. This is a time when Miss Grundy was only like 6 years old. We're talking about a TV movie that aired on May 6th, 1990 on NBC called To Riverdale and Back Again. Archie, Betty, Veronica, Jughead are older. They're doing their, I think it's their 15-year high school reunion.
That's correct.
And it's supposed to be this, like, dark, sexy version of Archie, but, no.
Wait, before we jump in, can I just point out that, like, high schools don't have 15-year reunions?
No. This feels like that episode of Psych where they forgot to do a 10-year reunion, and so then they just did a 15-year as a joke.
Yeah, pretty much. Sorry for interrupting you, Craig. Carry on.
No. We almost did a 15-year with my class, but then we got lazy and decided to wait for 20 because I'm old. But yeah, well, just like putting it into some kind of perspective, how old were you guys in 1990 when this aired?
I was 10.
When did it air in 1990?
May 6th.
May 6th. I was 8 years old, but I'm Chris. I was 8 years old, and I did not watch this.
Huh. I was, let's see, 1990. I was 12, and I don't remember watching the movie, but I bought the Archie Comics adaptation, which had the hefty 250 cover. John Byrne did the cover art.
Wait. They adapted this piece of shit into a comic book?
They did, and it was, the comic book version was apparently done before the roles had been cast, because, like, certain characters like Ethel, like, do have dark hair like they're supposed to. Jughead Jr. does look more like Jughead. John Byrne drew the cover of the To Riverdale and Back Again adaptation. The interiors were drawn by Gene Colan, who's a big comic book legend who did a lot of, like, Daredevil, Doctor Strange...
Didn't he co-create Blade? I know he did a lot of horror.
He co-created Blade and had a long run on the Tomb of Dracula with Marv Wolfman. And the flashback sequences were drawn by Stan Goldenberg, who was a major, you know, Archie Comics artist for several decades. The adaptation is slightly different. Obviously, it's not as sexual as the movie was. Those of you who are used to listening to us praising Riverdale might be surprised, because you're going to hear us not being too happy this time. So why don't we introduce ourselves?
I'm Russ Burlingame. I'm from comicbook.com and the Emerald City Video Podcast.
I'm Chris Hayner. I'm from Screener at ScreenerTV.com, and guy who yells about things on the internet.
And I'm Craig Byrne from KSiteTV.com. I also have the Twitter handle at RiverdaleTV, where, you know, all of you Archie Digest listeners should just, like, tweet random Riverdale stuff at us, because we enjoy that.
True. We've been interacting with a lot of listeners this week.
Yeah, it's fun. Some people are getting on the Sheriff Killer bandwagon, which makes me happy.
I hate it, and I hate you guys for making that a thing.
Well, talking about making things, you know, this show isn't free. I do pay hosting fees and other things. So we had been talking for a while about me putting together like a Patreon or doing some kind of something. There's a couple of things that I've made available that I just wanted to call the attention of our listeners to. If you go to paypal.me/EmeraldCityVideo, you can donate whatever from, you know, a penny up to whatever. Anybody who donates $10 or more gets a framed 8x10 photograph that I took of Pop's Diner. The other thing that we've done is on Redbubble, if you go to redbubble.com/people/Archie Digest, we've set up an account. So far, there is only one pattern that we're selling. We are selling coffee mugs, stickers, and other things with the hashtag Sheriff Killer design.
And now Chris is going to lose his shit.
I quit the podcast.
But we do have some other ideas for like shirt designs and that sort of thing. You know, Jason used to wear a shirt.
That's true.
You know,
One of the things that's a little bit tough with something like this is for the people, like, we have spoken to a handful of people who listen to us who are really enjoying the show, and that, like, that's super, super gratifying for us, but also we're kind of like, oh, well, maybe if one of these people wants to buy a t-shirt, that pays for a month of hosting.
I would buy an Archie is a fuckboy t-shirt.
I will try to put that together. I got a week off from my day job starting tomorrow, so I'll try to put that together for you.
There needs to be a Reggie as a fuckboy variant, though.
That's true.
Yeah.
But the thing that obviously is a little difficult is just like putting this out there so that nobody says, hey, why don't you just have one with like a logo? It's because basically every element of this podcast is owned by Archie. You know, we can't have Archie Digest a Riverdale podcast on a t-shirt because Archie owns Archie Digest, and the CW owns Riverdale.
And Archie Comics owns Riverdale.
Yeah, exactly.
And Apple owns Podcast.
Well, that's probably true. But I mean, the bottom line is, if you go on Redbubble, there are lots and lots of people selling bootleg Riverdale t-shirts, and, you know, some of them are kind of neat, so God bless them, but that's not us. We are, like, professional reporters who cover this stuff for a living. We know the people who should be financially benefiting from this stuff. And so it's not exactly in our wheelhouse to just kind of be like, oh, that'd be a really cool t-shirt. Let's do it. Because if we don't own it, we're not going to do that.
Though if there's anybody from Riverdale who's listening who wants to buy a Sheriff Killer t-shirt for Martin Cummins, that would be kind of amazing. Just putting that out there.
Don't do it.
Well, do you have a better suggestion, Chris?
Archie is a fuckboy.
Okay.
I got nothing. I just hate that Sheriff Killer has become the in vogue thing to do.
Well, if Archie is a fuckboy, then Archie in this To Riverdale and Back Again movie, is he like a fuck man? Because he's kind of ridiculous, too.
Don't be gross.
I didn't mean it. No, never mind.
No, but no, yeah. If we're looking at this To Riverdale and Back Again. First of all, if you haven't seen it, I don't know that I can recommend that you do see it, because it's terrible.
Unless you drink a lot first.
Yeah, like, listen, if you want to get wasted or high or something and then watch this awful, awful movie, go nuts. But it's so weird and misogynistic and gross, and Archie is so disgusting, and Betty and Veronica are falling all over themselves to be with him, and...
And there's a lot of adultery. It's just like hand waved.
There's so much adultery.
Yeah,
and I will say the one thing this TV movie has the one up on over Riverdale is Hiram Lodge is in it.
This is true.
Although Hiram Lodge is also, I'm sorry to interrupt, but Hiram Lodge is also involved in tearing down Riverdale landmarks, just like he is on the new show. So there
and
we
in
go.
The comics. During the Mark Waid run, it was the same thing. He tried to tear down Pops.
That damn Hiram Lodge. And Hiram Lodge in this is played by Governor Gatling from Benson, who I think he just passed away a year or two ago, at like age 95 or something like that. The more you know. But one thing I did find really interesting as soon as this thing launched was that the town of Riverdale is clearly the Warner Brothers backlot, which they also used for Hazard County. It was Smallville on Lois and Clark, and it was Stars Hollow on Gilmore Girls, to the point that I'm not convinced, like, or I think it's possible that Pop's Diner might have been Luke's Diner on Gilmore Girls, but I could be wrong.
Wait, was it really the Warner backlot?
It was totally the Warner backlot, the gazebo and everything, and I think Riverdale High School was, like, Boss Hogg's town hall from...
Well, and I mean... Yeah. You could see the, the building, and I'm terrible at describing these things, but the one that's like on a corner that goes kind of almost triangular. That you've seen that in a million things.
Including
Lois and Clark and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. And there was also a Lois and Clark connection in that Mr. Weatherby was played by David Doyle, who married Lois and Clark in the episode Swear to God This Time We're Not Kidding. So it all comes together. And Mark Snow...
Does it though?
Yeah, no, but Mark Snow did the music for this, which kind of surprised me because the music was kind of bland and usually he's known for doing a good job.
Yeah, that was my very first note, actually, Mark Snow of the X-Files fame.
He also did a show that was on the WB and then the CW about a young Superman. I forgot the name of it. What is it, Chris?
Superboy, The Adventures of Clark Kent.
There you go.
So, right? Yeah.
Well, you were just, you asked for that one, Kraken.
I kind of did. I just, you know, it's like when...
let's be clear, because it'll bother him if we don't mention it correctly. Craig was speaking about a television program called Smallville that aired on the Warner Brothers and then the CW network for a very long time. It starred a young Thomas Wellington as Clark Kent and Allison. No, I'm sorry. It was Alex Mack from that TV show, The Secret World of Alex Mack, as his friend.
Lois Lane.
Sure.
Felicity Smoke.
Oh, God, no. This is taking a dark turn, and people are going to start, like, turning it off right about now. So, yeah, I mean...
We won't talk about Smallville anymore, I promise.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about, like, things that are really bland, like, you know, like, Betty's boyfriend when we first meet him, you know? He was very bland.
Okay, so this is how bland and unimportant... It's how bad this movie is at drawing characters. I have no recollection of his name, and I literally stopped watching the movie before, right as you guys hit record.
Was it Bob? Robert, also known as Bob. I think.
Maybe? Yes, I think you're right.
I think Archie's fiance was Pam.
Yes.
Or
she was. And I wanted to say actually something about Archie's fiance that stuck out at me. And I'd be curious to see if either you guys either noticed this or if Craig, maybe it's in the comic. I think based on context that her last name is Gibson, as in Jennifer Gibson.
Ooh.
Because she referenced something about, well, all of Gibson's law graduates or grad school lawyers, blah, 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 blah. Something. Oh, the suspenders thing.
Well, yeah, and, because the firm that Archie was joining was Gibson something and something.
It's Gibson and Cratchit Law, according to the comic book.
Oh, my God. So they also worked in A Christmas Carol.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And that's pretty – but I was assuming because she used Gibson twice in dialogue and never – like she didn't say Cratchit except for when she said the full name of the law firm. That probably she was Gibson, because for whatever reason I got the impression that that she was part of the family that Archie was essentially becoming her dad's, you know, underling.
That would be really amazing and clever, and I think somebody needs to ask Roberto about that in an interview, or maybe not.
You got this, Craig.
Yeah. One question that I had watching: how did Jughead father a child if he's asexual?
Well, you know, he's mostly just scared of women.
Although
this version of Jughead wasn't asexual in as much as he was just terrified of being around women until he met Ethel Muggs.
Yeah. So
that's another thing that really pissed me off about this. They just constantly refer to her as Big Ethel, and she breaks mirrors and all these horrible things about a woman they don't show. And then her redemption at the end is that, oh, she's a model? Fuck you.
And none of them knew that.
Also, yeah, it's
well,
not
given
a
that, though, because nobody seems to be. Well, I guess that's not true. Archie had been in town the whole time. I guess my headcanon could be that Archie was just screwing with Jughead and letting him think that he was.
Although there could be some Jughead foreshadowing in that when Jughead was playing cards, he had all aces. Just
there you
putting
go.
That out there. Yeah. So, yeah, it's an asexual reference.
Yeah, which I did not know until very recently when all the asexual people were talking about Jughead in the comments thread under that video that I was mentioning last week. Ace kept coming up, and it's like, oh, you see it in context, and you figure it out pretty quickly.
So, again, I have this down in my notes, but it was interesting that they build this as such a, like, a sexy and beyond-the-comics take on Archie, when it's kind of tame compared to Riverdale. It's just gross, but it's kind of tame. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's tame from a graphic standpoint, but it's so ridiculously, politically incorrect doesn't seem to be the right way to describe it. It's, by modern standards, would be so incredibly offensive. They couldn't air this on TV in 2017.
Well, it's like, actually, even Ethel. It's like Betty, Veronica, and Ethel, any of them, don't seem to do anything but try to get a man or to impress a man.
Yeah, they're there to look pretty.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the immediate thing is, Archie, who are you going to choose? And then Archie's an idiot, but that's always Archie. But, and also the other thing that was kind of weird watching this was the flashbacks to when they were in high school, I guess. But, like, Jughead didn't have his cap. And these, if they graduated 15 years earlier, that would have been, like, 1975, but it looked like 1988. It just was
beyond,
weird.
Well, beyond that, like, the only thing that, since they didn't bother casting, like, younger versions of the characters, it was just Betty and Veronica had longer hair, and Jughead's hairline hadn't receded as far.
Yeah.
But they... Which is so he bad. Didn't at least have the cap. That was frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I was wondering that as I was watching. I kept waiting for them to, like, make references to the crown or for it to show up at some point. Or maybe it was part of his formal attire. But no, it just wasn't anywhere.
There was a crown on the sign for Pops. And I had gotten to the point where I was just like, I'll take it.
Speaking of Pops.
They kept calling him Pops.
Yes! It was driving me crazy because they kept calling it Pop Tate's. Oh, you know, we're trying to save Pop Tate's. Pop Tate's. Pop Tate this, Pop Tate that. Right, Pops? And I'm like, I don't understand what any of you are doing.
I don't think they understood what they were doing.
No.
I think one of the things that really, if we're going to talk about this in the context of Riverdale, other than, you know, talking about kind of the dark, sexy version that you already alluded to, the end game for this movie was to finally get a 35-year-old Veronica to the starting point of where she is in Riverdale. That was like the big, like, rah rah, this is a great, like, character moment for her, was literally just like trying to become a decent person and to shrug off her dad's money in a way.
I did love the bit where she said something about, yeah, I'd sooner work in a diner, which made me think of Hermione.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, but what was weird beyond that is, like, yes, they drew that distinction of where she got away from her father's money, but the movie open with the great, who's Archie going to choose, Betty or Veronica, and then it ended with both of them giving up their dreams to stay in town and ask him, who are you going to choose, Betty and Veronica? Yeah. And he didn't choose.
Yep. Pretty much. I mean, and obviously part of that is a function of the fact that this was presumably like either a pilot or a backdoor pilot, and they were hoping that there would be a TV show, and in that case, Betty and Veronica.
I can't imagine this as a weekly show.
But to be fair, that's how I mentioned this when I was talking to you guys off air. That's how the new Leave It to Beaver happened, with a movie that picked up later, and they thought, well, maybe we can turn this into a TV show.
Still the Beaver.
And they did, and it ran for 5 seasons. So it's not insane to me that they thought this could lead to a show, but I am so glad it didn't.
Oh, yes. This is, like, honest to God, when we were talking about the pilot, we talked about the idea that Riverdale had potential to be amazing, but at the outset, we also thought it had potential to be just garbage.
Yeah.
And basically, this movie is exactly the worst-case scenario of what we were all kind of worried about for Riverdale.
Yeah.
Random trivia. I'm looking at IMDb for this. The kid who played Jughead Jr., who was very annoying, is now a producer for a bunch of the 30 for 30 documentaries.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, he decided not to act, which is probably a smart move, because, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that, like, speaking of random trivia, you talked about this beforehand a little bit, that the guy's last name is Rich, but I can't remember, Archie.
Christopher Rich.
Yeah, Christopher Rich, who plays Archie Andrews here.
You mean from the television series Reba?
Yes.
Well, yeah, he was in Reba, but he was also, he played a, you know, there's this weird thing that you find when you're, like, going back through people's filmography. I saw, like, oh, he was on, like, a ton of episodes. It looks like he was a series regular at one point on Melissa and Joey with Sabrina the Teenage Witch star Melissa Joan Hart. And so I was like, oh, I should mention that because it's a Riverdale connection. And then I noticed he was actually on a random episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch. So apparently, in spite of the fact that this movie is an abomination that never went anywhere, he did make it to a show that at least had some ratings in the Archie universe.
I am willing to bet he had zero idea that Sabrina was in the Archie universe.
Oh, I would imagine that, too.
And also random trivia, I just found Sam Whipple, who played Jughead, died like 15 years ago.
Yeah, he had cancer when he was...
Ooh, that's terrible.
Why are you trying to bring us down, Craig?
For something more interesting than the movie was?
Oh.
Well, I mean, here's a thing that I wanted to... you mentioned the idea that they don't, like... Well, I'd be willing to bet he didn't know that Sabrina was in Riverdale. There was at least one other thing that that struck me, like, really just stuck out to me as like, oh yeah, really? Which was that apparently the people who worked on this show didn't realize that Josie and the Pussycats were from Riverdale, because they refer to the Archies as the greatest band in Riverdale High history.
Yeah. I really wish Josie and the Pussycats would have shown up somehow.
But then they would have made Josie and the Pussycats suck, and that would have been sad. Here's some more happy trivia. The guy who played Pop Tate, a.k.a. Pops, is still alive, and he is 94 years old.
Wow, Pop Tate outlived Jughead. Because of all them burgers, probably.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys a question about this thing. Am I misremembering this, or was it only white people?
There was one black person. I think it was Coach Clayton.
I was going to say, I think it might have been Coach Clayton.
Okay.
We didn't, because they mentioned they mentioned Coach Clayton during the go-kart thing, and we didn't see him.
But there was a Coach Clayton in the credits.
Randomly. Well, not only was there a Coach Clayton in the credits, but also randomly... Like, as they were all making their way down to where Pop was having his, like, standoff with the bulldozers, some black guy ran past Reggie and was just like, "You're a terrible sportsman."
Right.
And I assume from that that's supposed to be the coach, because I don't know why that would be the insult you pick if that wasn't the coach.
Okay, and whatever, speaking of Chuck Clayton, did anybody else cringe when Ethel made a reference to her jacuzzi?
Yeah, well done.
No, I didn't even
pick
up on that.
Yeah, I was like, oh,
funny.
Ethel in a jacuzzi. Get a sticky maple.
She's getting Jughead back for avoiding her all
week. That might have been more interesting.
That absolutely would have been more interesting, but probably in the way that they handled her character in this, it would have been just a terrible, terrible way of...
And I did like how they set up the possibility of Betty becoming a writer at the end of the movie. So maybe that's something that I will say positive about it.
Yeah, except they set her up as like, I can write sexy romance novels and be a grade school teacher at the same time.
Yeah. This is one of those weird things. Did you notice that nobody in this movie, that like there was just no sane, rational communication anywhere? It's like, okay, the judge points out that like, we're a court, we're not in the business of doing the right thing because it's right.
Right.
But even beyond that, like, the thing opens, essentially, with Veronica calling Weatherby, a person who presumably she has had no relationship with for 15 years, to ask him whether another random student is coming to a class reunion.
And finding out
clearly Veronica...
Sorry.
Well, to say, clearly Veronica's a spoiled brat, in that she was like, I'll just have my dad chart a Concorde to this small town with no airport.
Right.
She just assumed she could call anyone and do anything she wants.
Which, I mean, more or less does happen in the movie.
The other...
The other thing
that I thought this movie did fairly well that we haven't been able to see a lot on Riverdale, the show, is Reggie had a big role. It's kind of weird that on Riverdale, Reggie's... I mean, I understand actor availability and all that, but reading the comic books, Reggie is a major character and a bully, and he always messes things up. And he was very much that in this movie, and I did appreciate that, at least.
Yeah, I think part of that is the fact that you needed an antagonist in this movie, and Reggie is kind of ready for that. Whereas in Riverdale, there isn't one ongoing antagonist week to week, except for, you know, whoever.
Alice Cooper.
Yeah, but, you know, the worst antagonist to this movie, though, is whoever decided their remake of Sugar Sugar was a good idea.
Yee-haw! Sugar. Aw, oh, honey, honey. You are my candy girl, and you got me. Sugar. Aw, oh, honey, honey. You are my candy girl, and you got me rocking you.
Break it down with me.
When I kiss you, girl, never knew how sweet a kiss could be. Then you lay your ever-loving stuff on me.
Break it down for me, fella.
I'm gonna make your life so sweet. Rocking, moving, shaking and stuff. I'm gonna rock the world complete. Rocking, moving, grooving, say what?
Pour a little sugar on it.
Ah.
Sugar.
Ah, honey, honey.
You are my candy girl.
And you got me rocking you. Break it down, won't you please?
Sugar.
Aw, honey, honey.
You are my candy girl.
And you got me rocking you. Break it down, come on.
And
you got me. And you got me. And you got me.
Break it down, won't you please?
That is one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. It was worse than X-Men Apocalypse. That's how bad it was.
It's
kind of
so
great
bad.
Because I was, you know, we were all watching this today, and I had, like, gotten up to get a cup of coffee and paused the movie. And I came back, I hit play, and then just as the scene where the Sugar Sugar rap was happening came on, I got a message from one of you guys on Facebook that said, God, this movie's awful. And it's just like, you have no idea how well-timed that is.
Before we can even talk about that Sugar Sugar thing, we have to talk about the co-artist on it, which is Shitty Jughead Jr., who's an awful child who needs to be sent to military school.
That's true.
I can't explain how much disdain I had for how terrible this kid was. He was pouring... was it maple syrup that he poured in Archie's bed?
I thought it was Jell-O.
Yeah, no, it was jelly because
he said
something about how he got back at the kids by after he stepped in it, he put it back in the jar.
That's what it was. Okay, from the jump, from the second he met Archie or knew he existed. Also, Jughead's like, "That's your Uncle Archie." This kid clearly had no idea who Archie was.
Yeah.
So clearly, I don't believe that Jughead and Archie kept in touch at all.
That's one of the things that actually bugged me and this happens often in these kind of reunion sort of movies because of plot necessity. But when you have a serialized story like the Archie comics or like, you know, I have a really hard time. Like, yes, I know that most of us don't spend any time with most of our friends from high school, but I have a really hard time with the idea that we're just going to take for granted that Archie and Jughead have an...
Well, it's because Archie stood up Jughead so he could go bang Miss Grundy at the lake. And
not
and they haven't spoken in 15 years because Archie stood him up. We don't know that he's not doing it with this Miss Grundy.
I'm going to go ahead and call it assured. I'm going to assure you that it's not.
Yeah.
Was I the only one, by the way, who... I guess barrel-chested Archie, like Jock Archie, makes sense. Because
right.
He's a football player. But it really just feels
kinda
weird
to
me. Like even KJ Apa, like, that dude has muscles, but he's like Spider-Man muscles. He's, like, he's live and he's kind of slender. Like, this dude was, like, he looked like somebody who used to be a weightlifter 5-10 years ago and, like, never lost that muscle mass.
He looks like what you'd expect Moose to look like at 33.
Yeah, exactly. And again, like, none of this is, like, body shaming this dude because, like, but for Archie, it just seems like a very weird build. Like, it's not how I picture him. And when I say that, I mean, it's just not how he's ever been drawn or depicted, including in, like, the Flash.
Yeah, like, Life with Archie, which for a while there was a really good comic book.
Which came after this.
You know, especially when, like, Norm Breyfogle was drawing it. Good stuff.
And part of it, too, I think, was the fact that, like, Archie is the main character in this. He's very much the center of everything. And every other character, like, you can talk about performances, you can talk about what they were given to work with, whatever. But, like, every other character more or less looks the way that you would expect them to look from the classy other.
Except for Ethel. Comics.
And so the fact that, like, that's true, but that's a, yeah. Like, that's a joke.
And joke.
But so, like, the fact that Archie is the only person who doesn't look, or who looks so kind of out of place as Archie, and Archie is the main character, it just struck me as weird. And again, like, nothing against the actor. He did fine with the garbage they gave him to do.
Speaking of the garbage they gave them to do, you know, we were talking about Jughead Jr., I think his name was Jordan, there were a lot of attempts at humor in this movie that just fell flat. Like, I don't think I laughed even once.
Yeah, like, I can't think of it.
Like, those antics weren't really funny. You know, it's like, when Betty or Veronica were throwing themselves at Archie, it just was awkward. Like, when he's trying to keep them from seeing each other, it's just really awkward, and it's not good.
Well, now listen, I understand that 1990 was a different time as far as entertainment goes and what we'd been exposed to, but that whole scene is also so incredibly cliche that if it's going to work, it has to be done super creatively and super well, and this didn't really do either of those things. It was just kind of like, oh, we've seen this movie in, like, sex comedies before. Yeah. And we're just gonna try to do it ourselves, and it in the most boring way imaginable.
The thing that I've been doing, like, at night, I have a hard time because I work so late at night. I have a hard time turning my brain off, and so I I'll put in an earbud and I'll listen to, like, an old TV show or something just to let my brain rev down when I first go to bed. And I've been watching Cheers, and, like, one of the things you see when you're watching a really crappy, like, sex comedy from 1990 after having watched a whole lot of Cheers lately is you're just like, okay, they knew better than this by 1990.
Yeah, they did.
And
they
so,
sure,
like,
did.
That's just one of the things that like, really run. Because so often when you look back at stuff like this, you can kind of write it off as, like, well, it was 1990. But it's like, no, I'm here to tell you right now, like,
oh, yeah,
it holds up. Like, for the most part, a lot of the humor in that show, like, some of it wouldn't fly, and even some of the stuff that seemed really clever when I was a kid, it's just like, oh, yeah, like, the Boys in the Bar episode where everybody's scared about being in the room with a gay guy, like, that wouldn't fly at all, even though the moral of the story was, like, screw you guys, that's nonsense. Like, the jokes themselves wouldn't fly on TV now. But, like, I'd say 85% of Cheers would probably still work. And so when you compare that to this, and you're like, yeah, this came out, I think, right in the middle of Cheers.
Towards the end. It was after Rebecca was on.
By this point, they'd already seen a lot better.
Yeah.
That's true.
Oh, sorry.
But, like, by this point, you know, television was not this crappy on a week-to-week basis.
I think another thing that I noticed watching this is it kind of attests to what a good job they've done of building the Archie Comics universe since this movie was made. Like, having a character like Kevin Keller, or, like, you know, like, at this time, Cheryl wasn't really a part of the comics, but, like, characters like Kevin and Cheryl, and, you know, bringing Josie and the Pussycats into the new show, I think just gives the current incarnation of Riverdale so much more personality and class. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the reasons that I would kind of like to see, as much as we've talked about kind of how difficult it would be to bring Sabrina into Riverdale and kind of keep all the parts of that with the integrity that you want them to have, like, both let her be Sabrina and also let Riverdale be Riverdale.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of why I want to see them at least roll the dice and try it.
Yeah.
Because one of the great things about Riverdale so far is that there's no corner of the Archie, like, world that's off limits.
Cosmo the Merry Martian.
Well, I mean, the fact that he's not there doesn't mean he doesn't exist.
Yeah, I don't know if I said this on the air yet, so if I did already, I apologize for repeating myself, but I would love to see a version of To Riverdale and Back Again with Cole Sprouse narrating.
I don't remember either if you said that before or after we hit record, but I would be down for it.
Yeah.
Ever.
Oh, okay, so that must have been before Hayner came out. Yeah, the thing that I said in response was we need to, like, go on Kickstarter and raise, like, $1 million so that we can do it, like, Funny or Die style. And just,
I would just, like...
If you think that would cost $1 million, you're out of your mind.
Yeah, kind of. But it would be amazing just to hear just Cole Sprouse. And then this weird balding guy who calls himself Jughead says, you know... Huh. Yeah, it just was weird.
anybody else notice, by the way, and I know that, you know, these are both things that exist in the Archie universe, but as a nice kind of way of differentiating the kind of other here versus in Riverdale, they used Midvale instead of Southside.
I thought Midvale was just another town, like kind of like where Sabrina lives.
Well, it's not exactly the same. Like, it's not... They didn't make it to be Southside. But I just mean because there are other towns in the Archie universe. Midvale's one of them. Southside's one of them. And then I think there are others, but those are the two most frequently referenced in the comics. And it's just kind of like, yeah, like, we referenced the one of... We referenced, you know, Southside reasonably often in Riverdale and seemingly more often as the season goes on because, like, Episode 8 looks like it's super serpent-heavy. Midvale, I think there's been a passing reference to Midvale once. I think that's where Alice Cooper is from or something like that. I feel like I remember Machen saying the word. But the fact that that's where Betty teaches in this version and that was like a locale that they referenced on multiple occasions, it just, in my head, I was just like, oh, they used Midvale instead of Southside.
I also noticed...
Well, I was going to say, before we go much further, because I don't know if we mentioned this at the front of the episode, you can actually watch To Riverdale and Back Again if you so choose.
Yes.
Some crazy monster has uploaded the entire thing to YouTube for free. So you could just go look at it. And
that's true. Also, if you
understand
if you, for some reason, really, really needed to, you could go buy a VHS on Amazon, because it did get an official commercial release back in the days of VHS. You could have rented this at...
So they called it Archie Return to Riverdale.
I think that it was Return to Riverdale when it was on TV, and then it's To Riverdale and Back Again was the home
video. I think it's the other way around, because the comic book adaptation is called To Riverdale and Back Again. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, that makes more sense. I will say, by the way, as far as your observation about the comic book adaptation, how they adapted the comic before everything was shot, and so things don't look how they should, and some lines are different and stuff like that. Like, that's a super common thing for comic book adaptations. You can see it, like, in Jerry Ordway and Denny O'Neill's Batman adaptation from 1989. You definitely see it in the Riverdale, like, prequel comic, the one-shot. Because if you look at, I mean, there's like 10 things that I could have pointed out if I wanted to, but the one that stuck out at me because it's just such an easy joke is that Miss Grundy has a new Volkswagen Bug instead of a classic VW Bug in the comic. And so, like, I took a screen grab of my Comixology edition and just posted it to the Archie Digest Facebook page with a caption like, "This is what happens when your writer gives you the instruction, draw a VW Bug, and doesn't tell you."
Yeah, it kind of...
Yeah. Well, it's also like, I can speak to the comic book adaptation of the very first Ninja Turtles movie, which also has quite a few differences from the finished product. A lot of times, and this also goes to book adaptations of movies, or novelizations of movies, a lot of times they're working off of a different version of the script than they produced, or they're working off of a cut of the movie that isn't
Marvel Star
cut.
Wars.
So you just, there are things in the final.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Where you see Jabba the Hutt. Yeah.
I was, you know, Marvel Star Wars was the version that, or was the example I wanted to use that my mind was blanking on, so I reached out and grabbed that Batman thing. But yeah, that's a
perfect. But yeah, like in this. Sorry.
And for non-comic book people, it doesn't make any sense, but for non-comic book people, the original Star Wars comics from the 70s were a thing that essentially came out right around the time of the movie, and the visuals of a lot of characters and a lot of concepts were totally, totally different than you eventually saw in the movie. And that was a good example of like how Lucas, you know, early on recognized that if he had a comic book adaptation, it would help it to look like there was a, you know, kind of a Batmania, Beatlemania thing going on where people just couldn't get enough of it. And so that comic, I think, was commissioned before the
movie. Yeah, actually, I think it's the latest issue of Alter Ego magazine, which is by the comic book creator Roy Thomas, has a whole feature on the genesis of the Star Wars comics, if you are curious. But what I was going to say about the To Riverdale and Back Again comic is, at the end of this, Jughead and Ethel do end up together, and she's in the group picture at the end, which, of course, is different than the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was implied, certainly for the sake of the movie, because it's not a movie that's all that deep in its thinking. So I imagine that, you know, if you were to ask the question, hey, wait, did this guy get what he wanted? The answer is yes, because all of the male characters got what they
wanted. And all the female characters is like, wait, what about me?
Yeah, pretty much. One thing, by the way, and this is more like contemporary social conditioning than anything else, but certainly it's something that stuck out at me. Throughout the movie, I was watching both the way that he handled stuff on his business side and the like egomaniacal kind of approach that he took to things, and thinking, like, okay, so Hiram Lodge is just...
And they make a reference to that.
And then there was... Yeah, there's a line in the movie where Archie refers to Hiram Lodge as Donald Trump. And I'm just like, well, they said it out loud for us. I guess I don't have to pussyfoot
around. Yeah, that was fairly timely, you know, to be watching now. Like, I'm sure somebody, like, thinks, what, Donald Trump was a thing in 1990? Yes, he was. You know?
I think most people probably at this point are aware that Donald Trump has been a thing basically since he was a fetus, because he's... got money and a bottom.
Since Home Alone 2. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, that that amused me when Archie made that line. I think it was Archie who made the line.
It was, because it was when he went to Veronica's house. But yeah, those are all the notes that I have on this bizarre abomination. I mean, certainly... Let's just talk for a minute, because one of the things that we do relatively regularly is to praise the cast of Riverdale. Were there anybody in this that really stuck out at you as having a great performance? I mean, I can't think of
anybody. I thought Reggie was
now.
Okay.
Jughead Jr.
No, I think Reggie was okay for playing a jerk. You're the worst. And I liked Mr. Weatherby. I'll give them that.
Yeah, I Mr. Weatherby was another one of those weird things where I'm just like, wait, so they don't have any agency in the fact that their band is just playing the 15-year reunion? What if they...
Well, Archie clearly forgot how to sing.
Like, when I was in high school... Yeah, well, I mean, when I was in high school, I played bass. And, let's see, that was 18 years ago. I couldn't... Like, if you asked me to, like, play a concert, I probably would need, like, a week's preparation to be able to play... one song in a way that I would be comfortable doing.
Yeah, this was also interesting for me as far as cast goes, because I recently did a watch of the original Dallas series, and Karen Coppins, who played Veronica, had a recurring role on Dallas for like a season or two. So, of course, I was kind of seeing that when I watched, and I didn't think she was bad, but I think both her and Lauren Holly were just kind of there. Like, they were inoffensive, but they weren't spectacular either.
Yeah, and part of that, I think, is just the fact that they were given absolutely nothing to do except for to be...
Right, it's kind of like Bob and Pam had nothing to do but to be obnoxious and buzzkills that you knew were going to end up together by the end of the movie anyway.
Yeah. Although, again, I wasn't sure about Pam, because in my head I was thinking that she might end up with Reggie, because she was so kind of like almost Veronica.
Yeah, at least in the comic book adaptation, they gave her a different hair tone than Betty or Veronica. She was somewhere in the middle. Yeah, so we got to talk about this since we didn't have New Riverdale. It's kind of killing me. I hope the CW sends us some more screeners soon.
I know. I was really hoping to find out.
It really was.
It really was.
Like, even by 1990 standards, it was really bad.
Oh, that's one of the things that I really wanted to kind of, like, make sure to emphasize is, like, yeah, you can, like, you can see this, but a good example, one of my favorite movies is this thing called Zero Effect with Bill Pullman and Ben Stiller. And it's a kind of a weirdly charming movie that I really enjoyed. They made a TV pilot based on it. Mm-hmm. And I remember being told for years that it was just an abomination against God and man, and that Jake Kasdan, who had written and directed the movie, had essentially had the pilot buried so deep no one would ever find it. And then about a year and a half, 2 years ago, it popped up on YouTube. And after watching it, I was like, eh. Like, it's not good by any stretch of the imagination, but it's really not offensive. Like, to Riverdale and back again is pretty offensive. Like, it's just awful.
Have you ever seen the Clerks live-action pilot?
I have not. Yeah, I've been looking for it for years.
Yeah, I think it's on YouTube.
Yeah. I'll have to look again. These are the things that I forget about for long periods of time, and then somebody asks me about them, and I'm like, oh, yeah, And again, like, I'm aware that it's terrible from everything I've heard, but because of my fascination with the Kevin Smith movies, I want to kind of see it and just be like, okay, well, that's a thing that I saw.
Jim Brewer is funny in it.
There we go.
And yes, right now, I just brought it up and then marked it as a favorite so that I can find it later. There is indeed a version of the Clerks TV pilot that was uploaded about a year ago.
You know, another thing, you know, going back to this horrible movie, is like their take on Sugar Sugar was so awful that I'm pretty sure after we get off this podcast, I'm going to watch the Josie and the Pussycats version just to wash this out of my head. Because
that's fair.
But you won't have a 12-year-old boy.
I'm
rapping.
Okay with that. Yeah, I'm fine.
Are you sure?
I don't need 12-year-old boys rapping.
I mean, all right.
I think I'm okay with that. I would much rather see Josie and the Pussycats and Cheryl hopping in and. This movie really needed Cheryl Blossom to just tell everybody how much they suck.
See, that I'll is do the it. Thing. Probably even more than the Cole Sprouse thing.
We'll just loop Madeline into the show. Just be like, oh, Betty, Veronica, I see you're still pathetic. You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's it. It's
that
funny.
Would be better.
One of the things that I thought, and part of this was probably just a function of the time, but part of this is the fact that everybody was terrible. Like, I remember thinking, if you aired this, like, you know, like, or say if this was up on CWC, just because, why not? So many people, like, think about the Veronica shippers, who would be like, what the hell are we watching? Why does this exist? Not just because, like, the two women have no chemistry whatsoever and basically have no conversation whatsoever, but just the fact that, you literally have these moments of like, oh yeah, he's gonna, you know, Betty's there and she's showering and he's gonna shove Veronica in a door, and like the sex comedy convention is that as soon as he leaves the room, the two are gonna find each other, and you're just like, yeah, but there would be literally nobody out there thinking that like them finding each other in that situation would be sexy. Like, it's just, it's a movie that tries so hard to be sexy and fails so hard that sexy is nowhere to be found.
Well, it's like someone had sexy defined to them by their mom, and then they were like, all right, I'm making a sexy movie. And it's just the most bland, boring version of quote-unquote sexy.
It's like those romance novels that this Betty is going to write.
I picture the romance novels that this Betty's going to write to be like the one that Kristen Bell narrated in a zombie.
Kristen Bell can narrate this.
I wanted to write Fifty Shades of Grey.
I think she's busy with
it. This should be lost to the fans of time forever.
Yeah,
earlier when I said, listen, listeners, earlier when I said you should go to YouTube to find this, I was wrong. Don't watch this. It was
definitely a time suck.
You don't deserve that.
Yeah, I think I am the only one who. You guys had seen it too, though, right? Because you guys had seen it at some point and knew that it sucked. as I said, I'd only seen the Sugar Sugar rap, so I went into this being like, okay, let's power through this, because I knew it was going to be terrible, but having not seen it before, I was more willing to kind of just buckle in and, like, blow through.
Yeah, I saw it a very, very long time ago, and I'd forgotten how bad it was.
One thing I will say, this version of Riverdale with, like, all the adults having their own drama really just, it drives home to me that that's a thing that seems to have resonated through and carried over to Riverdale, because obviously, like, we've talked about how, you know, Fred and FP were basically Archie and Jughead.
They're so much more dynamic. I mean, Alice Cooper's batshit crazy, totally. And, you know, you got Hermione being sexy, and, you know, Dylan McKay going around being Dylan McKay, and then you've got, you know, FP, who everybody seems to love, so they all have personalities. These four, I mean, they're about as existent as Jughead's hair. Just no.
All right, yeah. So, I mean, this is a pretty short episode for us. This could be fun. In the world of this show, which
Sheriff Keller's not on
kill
this
Jason
show,
Blossom?
So nobody killed Jason Blossom.
Well, I killed Jason Blossom, and then I murdered the entire town.
With a bomb wrapped in a present that Jughead Jr. thinks is cool.
Yeah. Oh, no. Clearly the murderer is Hiram Lodge's, like, his weird Bond henchman who decided to wrap a bomb like a present and be like, this is how I'll stop Archie from seeing Veronica.
That was actually Keller.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
No. It wasn't.
I'm going to go ahead and say that if I had to pick somebody to kill Jason Blossom out of this, I'm going to say Big Ethel. Because I think that secretly, she's like a Bond girl. Like, the reason that she's all sexy and sexed up, and she's still just like, sure, Jughead, you're a loser who never gave me the time of day, but come on to the hot tub, is because she was going to, like, wrap a chain around his neck and end him right then and there.
But then she was won over by Jughead Jr.
Maybe Jughead Jr. is the mastermind who killed Jason Blossom.
Aw.
There you go. It's like Scrappy-Doo in whichever of the live-action Scooby-Doo movies that was.
Yeah, Jughead Jr. was the Scrappy of this movie.
Yeah, the weird thing is that because Jughead Jr. was, like, on the cover of a comic and that he was, like, introduced so early on, I kind of expected other people
in
the show to have kids. So that then it would
Moose's kid, Max, I think his name was.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Moose and Midge had a kid. And, of course, Midge has not been seen on Riverdale yet.
No.
Yeah.
Although, I feel like, was it Ethel or was it Midge that Cole was talking about on our first set visit? I thought it was. Oh, yeah, no, that makes sense. It would have been Ethel.
Well, and Midge is referenced in the Riverdale one-shot comic. Because Archie says, oh, Midge's parents are out of town, so I'll see you later, Jughead.
One of the many douchey things that he does in the one-shot.
So, the next episode of Riverdale is called The Outsiders. I'm looking forward to talking about it with everybody. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, that one appears to be... It seems as though that phone conversation between Hermione and Veronica and Hiram does not go well, because apparently the Serpents are out to get Andrew's Construction.
Which is weird, since one of them works at Andrew's Construction.
That's true. But, you know...
That'll be interesting.
In any event, I'm glad we were able to talk about this. Does anybody have anything else to say, or should we say our goodbyes, or...
Let's go around and give our information. Chris, why don't you kick us off?
You can find me online at ScreenerTV.com. That's where I write a bunch of stupid things about comic book shows and how much I really hate Barry Allen on The Flash, because he's an asshole. Also, at Chris Hayner on Twitter and Instagram, ChrisHayner. And also at Waterworld Photos on Instagram, because if you don't like it, I'll probably
die. I'm Craig Byrne. You can find me at KSite TV, KSITE TV. I also have the Riverdale TV Twitter, @RiverdaleTV. Tweet at me. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, by the way, and leave reviews. nice reviews. If you don't like the show, I mean,
wait and review that back.
I know To Rodell and Back Again was terrible, but don't like decide that we're terrible because we hated it, because that would just be mean.
Yeah, I'd like to point out, when you do rate and review this show, rate it as a whole and not necessarily on this specific episode about one.
Yeah, like, write about how smart we are for figuring out that Keller was the killer like 5 weeks ago. You know?
Write about how Craig is awful for continually saying that.
And I'm Russ Burlingame. You can get me at Russ Burlingame, RussBurlingame. That's long and I'm not going to repeat it, so if you didn't get that, it's at @ECV_podcast for the Emerald City Video Podcast, which I do with a bunch of people I used to work at a video store with. You can also find my writing at comicbook.com, where I write about Riverdale and all the other CW shows. And yeah, Hayner and I were tweeting earlier today about the fact that there needs to be a... We finally have figured out the formula for the CW-DC crossover, which is it needs to be some kind of competition about whether Archie or Barry Allen is just the worst.
Oh, they're both also terrible. We could have...
I'm not going to see...
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah.
All right, and thank you guys. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast. We are a podcast about a story about a town. And in this
although
case,
this week we're a podcast about a terribly told story about
a horrible TV movie.
That's exactly the case. Yeah.
We've got to go.
Oh, sure.
It was great seeing you guys.
Hey, you're not alone. You've got us. We'll visit.
Yeah, this place is cool.
He liked the explosion.
All employees, whoever has killed the most people will be allowed to live.
We are not going to entertain killing people.
This isn't the time for timidity. That was hardcore, bro.
The Belko Experiment, rated R, in theaters March 17th.
Hi, everybody. Archie Digest co-host Russ Burlingame here. You might be wondering why there was a trailer for the Belko Experiment attached to this episode of Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast. That's simple. I wrote a tie-in comic for the Belko Experiment, which you can see now at comicbook.com. You can find the comic directly at tinyurl.com/belkocomic. It is free. It is an 8-page digital short, so it's not much of a commitment of your time. But I figured because a lot of the folks who listen to our show also follow me on Twitter and see some of the other stuff that I do, this was a good thing for me to announce to our audience. The reason that I'm mentioning it now instead of having it come up during the show is because, frankly, it debuted earlier today. And when we recorded the show 2 days ago, I had no idea that it was going to be up yet, or that you would be able to get it at the URL I just gave you, which is tinyurl.com/belkocomic. The movie itself is directed by Greg McLean and written by James Gunn. His screenplay heavily influences my comic because, out of necessity, it's a pretty spoilery comic. It takes place during the movie. You don't want to read my comic until you've seen the movie if you're going to watch it. But as a result, there's lots of chunks of kind of dialogue that are pulled straight out of the film. I hope that you enjoy it, and I wanted to at least make sure to mention it to people so that if they were interested, they had a chance to go check it out.